Testing. November 2nd, 1978, talking to Roger Dayton in Kaiku. Well, when were you born?
I was born in the month of September, the year 1921, at Nulato, Alaska, down here.
Do you remember any stories about when you were born, like what it was like and what your parents were doing and who delivered you? And
oh, it was hard to say. I can't recall that doctor. His name is anyway, he named me after his father, Roger.
Yeah,
which I know. Yeah, he was a doctor from the States. That was there as a physician there.
Was that, were you born in a hospital?
Yes, an old hospital used to be down there. It's all torn down now.
And did you hear any stories like, oh, what your mom was doing just when you were ready to be born? And
Well, she used to live at Nulato, and my father used to be from up here, Kaikuk. And well, I was born before they got married. I know that much.
And so that was, they were living in Nulato at the time?
No, my father was visiting my mother down there now and then. And then that, I think it was 2 months after, shortly after they got married that I was born. I have to take that back because I was just the other way there. And then, from what I heard, I was immature. I mean, born a little too early. And a lot of old people was concerned about my mother. And that's what my father used to tell me. But then I guess I pulled through.
And your mom did okay too?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Were
you the oldest one?
Yes, I was the first. Yeah, I'm the oldest one there. And the next brother I had was 3 years younger than I was. Because since I started remembering, was when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I remember taking a trip to the coast just before Christmas. Of course, a lot of these people from the coast used to trap closer to us on the Hoosley River. And then we happened to be trapped close to them. Of course, on this side of the ridge there, they invited my old man over for Christmas and New Year's. From that time, I started remembering. Well, it was an interesting trip, but it was just sort of a dream to me now and then.
So did you go over there too?
Yes, I went over there, and we went to Norvik, the village of Norvik, for New Year's. And I remember they had torch lit, and they were walking around with it, celebrating New Year's. Of course, like I said, it was just like a dream to me, off and on. I remember coming back on a high mountain. The wind was blowing pretty strong there. A fellow named Basil, he was with us. He was on the, what do you call it, jeepoo. And I guess I was way in the sleigh. My father and mother were walking behind. I suppose we came back home, and then me remembering was like off and on. Yet I remember the next brother I had, John Jr., being born in one of the camps up there, and of course an old lady by the name of Old Toby, Miss Old Toby, delivered him.
That was right when you were out camping then.
Yes, we were coming down to sell our, my folks were coming down to sell their first. It was on the month of January, just for so long down here. Of course, everybody else was doing that. Whenever they think they've got enough fur, they come down, or they're short of grocers or something. Of course, everybody else were doing the same thing as we were, trapping. There used to be camps about every 10 miles apart in those years, all the way from here to Huslia.
All the way around
the river? Yes, here and there. I averaged from about 10 to 15 miles apart. And everybody was trapping in those years. Of course, everything was cheap and fur was pretty high.
So where did people sell their furs?
Well, there was a couple of traders here. And they sold their furs to them. They didn't sell their furs to anybody else in those years. And after they settled down here, of course, they celebrated for a little and then were ready to go back to the camp to start trapping again. And it went on like that, well, for year after year. Of course, the people would move back out again in April. I mean, they'd come down before April and move back out to do some muskrat hunting. And then around the first part of June, they'd all move back down here. Some would do pretty good with muskrat. Of course, they were about 50 to 75 cents apiece in those years.
What did you do when you were real young?
Oh.
Like when you went out muskrat hunting.
Oh, yes. From about 8 years old, I started remembering going out with my mother, sitting behind in the canoe. And then I never was still, you know. Every time a muskrat was swimming towards her, I'd want to look at that muskrat. And the canoe wasn't steady. So I suppose all the kids were that way, you know. Sometimes she'd miss the muskrat. And she sort of scolded me for it, just tell me to keep still. And as I grew along, and I did what all the other boys were doing. Sometimes I'd go out with my old man hunting little ways. Well, of course, he'd tell me this and that of how things were done. Sometimes he'd go out for birch and I'd go with him walking. And of course, I used to play around doing just what any other kids my age would do.
What kind of things is that?
Oh, just, for instance, throwing sticks at a squirrel or just running around while he was busy with a birch.
What was he doing with the birch?
Oh, well, he was just hewing it. He was getting ready to, I mean, just hunting a birch to build a sleigh. And then after he hewed all the birch, he'd leave it there. And then later on, he'd get them with a dog team. It was much easier that way to get them home there. No.
Did he teach you how to look for birch for dogs?
Oh, yes. He told me to just look for a certain kind of birch. He said to test it first, you know, hew it and then tear it down. And then to test it, he told me to tear out a piece and twist it to see if it was just like rubber. And see, that's the best birch that you can get for snowshoes and for sleigh. And that would last a long time, you should tell me. And then as I grew older, well, I used to go out bear hunting with him in the fall, but I never used to last too long. You know, I was just too young and get tired easily. In the fall time, when the bears are start hibernating.
Would he walk a long ways? Is that why you wouldn't last?
Oh well, we would just walk in a zigzag, you know. Not in a straight line. Of course, we'd try to find a ridge where we think the bear hole was. And then we'd never walk too far like that in a day. And then later, and then as I grew older, I used to still be go out in the fall with him. But this time I used to last longer. That was when I was about 11 or 12 years old.
When Was it just you that would go out, or would younger brother go out?
Oh, no. Since I was the oldest, since they were a little too young, I used to go out mostly. He used to take me out mostly. You know. I used to start trapping, but not a very, just small game like weasel and squirrels, so something small game. I used to snare rabbits. And a couple of years later, when I was about 14, that's the first time I started going out trapping, real trapping with my old man. There was quite a few of them in that year. And he'd used to go out with me just a little way to show me how it was done. And then later on, we'd move to the next camp about 6, 7 miles up further, and then we start another line. And this time I'd do it alone myself. But I never used to go very far. And then, that was my first start of my trapping.
Did your mom ever teach you anything about any kind of hunting or trapping?
Oh, no. I used to go quite a bit with her in muskrat hunting in the spring, like I said, and going out with her when she used to look at her rabbit snares. Sometimes I'd go out just a little ways with her, looking at her traps, then I'd walk back to camp. She'd tell me to go on home. But then that was before I was 14 years old. I was just 14 when I started trapping, like I said, with my old man. And that year we did pretty good. And the next year, oh well, the fur wasn't too abundant because whatever you trap, take one in any particular year, it just isn't there next year to take. So as I grew older, every time my old man and I go out trapping, when it snows, he used to walk ahead. And I used to handle a sleigh. Of course, I was about 16, 17 years old, but at that time. And then at that time, I used to go out alone. And in some incidents, he used to go packing out with no dogs, just packing. And I used to be along with him. And he'd show me how things were done, how to make a camp, and just which direction to go for a certain type of game. I mean, for instance, we trapped mostly marten in the mirrors, and he just showed me where to set his traps, like in a little creek or in a bunch of timber. He taught me that, and then later on he told me that I just had to make a go at myself camping out. Of course, I was just about 18 or 19 when I first camped out all alone.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, well, it felt kind of lonely at first, but then he told me that you just have to take it, but it's just part of the life he used to live. I mean, at times, I remember when I was just a little kid, he used to go out packing maybe for 3-4 days without dogs after we settle in one place. And then later on, he'd just go around that line just one day, one or a day and a half. I used to remember that. And I'd do the same thing, like I said, when I was about 18 or 19. Of course, he'd tell me just where to go, just how far to go, just about where to make camp, so that way I wouldn't be tire myself out one day.
What did you like to do the best?
Fun?
Did you have a favorite thing you liked about camping or trapping?
Oh, well, yes. It was an outdoor life like everybody else. And we just used to do as we pleased out there. That's what we like about it. And it was a lot of fun just moving along with dogs. Of course, that was part of our life.
Did you have your own dog team?
No. Just when I was about 18 or 19, I started having my own team. And of course, like I said, I used to drive. We used to just have one sleigh when we were moving out quite a ways. And then sometimes we'd both ride, and when a dog gets a little tired, he'd walk behind while I go on to the next camp to. I'd ride the sleigh. Sometimes I just told him that I could walk behind, and he'd go ahead and drag the dogs on into the next camp.
When you made a camp, when you were just camping out, what did the camp look like?
Well, when we were camping out, just packing without no tent or stove, we used to cut them spruce. We'd shovel snow away, and we'd just cut them young spruce and put them limbs on the ground there. And we'd used to have fire in front. And sometimes we'd always have to carry have a canvas along, maybe about 7x6 in case it snows while we're sleeping. And sometimes we'd make a lean-to out of that at the back, and that holds the heat during very cold weather. And of course it was kind of rough being cold at night, but then there was no other way to do it when you have to go certain ways.
About how cold would it be?
Oh, maybe sometime 55 or 60 below. Yeah, but then we still had to. We just couldn't lay around too long, just waiting for to warm up. And sometimes.
Did you travel in any weather?
Oh yes, in any weather. But then, except in soft weather, like when it's too warm, dogs are just feel too soft too, you know, to travel. And sometimes if it's too cold, if we're at our main camp, we just stay home, like say about 55 or 60 below. But out there, we just have to keep moving out in the, where we're trapping, having tent up here and there. We just have to go over the line. Sometimes it snows, and then we'd have to go over it again to take this. To uncover it from the snow. And in the springtime, like I said, people used to come down. What fur they ever catch. We'd come down, say about 15 of March, and go back around 5th of April or a little later. And then we'd come to our main cabin there, and then we'd move out to the spring camp, which is about 3 miles further out. And then in the month of April, we'd move out, say around 20th or 25th. And then we'd settle there at the camp, waiting for the rats to come out. I mean, after so long, when it turns warm, they'd come out to feed. And we'd wait there, or set a trap there, and either shoot them or catch them in traps. And after we're through rat hunting, we'd move out to the river by boat, little poling boat. Of course, we'd make about a couple of trips out to the river by the slough, and then over Portage. Of course, we had dogs too, you know. And then we'd hitch up our dogs and drag that boat over to Portage.
We'd drag it right over there?
Yes, right over, yes. Of course, we'd make a load of all our stuff first, and then come back and get the dogs. And then use them to pull the sleigh over to Portage, which is about 300 yards. Right, at this particular place. And then after were out on the river, we'd move out to the mouth of Katil. And of course, we'd come back to get the dogs again. We would relay trip. And we'd stay at the mouth of Katil, just hunting around, hunting some more rats. And we used to watch people come down. They all come down in the spring in their boats. They'd come and camp with us and tell us all the news and how they've been doing. Of course, we knew all the people since they were from the next village. It used to be pretty good up there, from what I heard, around Huslia. Game was plentiful, especially muskrat. And they'd come down and sell their fur down here and spent the. Well, after we all through rat hunting, we'd come down. We'd stay in town about 3 weeks and then move back down to a fish camp to get ready for fishing in the fall. I mean, for the winter. Of course, while we're in town here, we'd go out, gather up logs and poles to make a fish wheel. And sometimes we'd build it here, sometimes down at the camp.
Who would do the building?
Oh, my old man and sometimes my uncle, Albert, there. And sometimes we'd hire. They'd hire help. And sometimes I'd help. And then we'd move down to camp, and then the fish seemed to be plentiful in them years. We'd catch the same amount of fish every year, seems like. I remember just only 1 year there was no fish. That was in 1939. And then everybody sort of had a hard time with dog feed that winter. That's the only year I remember.
Do you know why there was no fish?
No, I can't say. There was plenty of fish around Kortak. It was pretty heavy up till up that far. But from there up this way, there was no fish, hardly anything. So we had, that winter, we had sort of had a hard time with dog feed there.
What happened to your team?
Oh, well, we'd have to buy cornmeal or oats to mix with a little feed. We managed to pull through. Yes, we snare a lot of rabbits, and then we'd use that sometimes.
Did you have to kill some dogs?
Oh no, not really. Oh, I suppose sometimes, but I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember killing any dogs here just because we're short of dog feed. We out in the bush, we always managed to have something around, like rabbits, and say the bones of meat we've been using, or any scraps for that matter. This particular year there was no fish that year, that summer. But then we managed to pull through that year.
Where was the fish camp at?
Down this way, halfway between here and Nulato. Of course, there was fish camps all along there, here and there. About one or three miles apart, all the way down to Nulato. Now these years, you hardly see any. Well, these years, you mostly see fish whales, since they're commercial fishing. Since from around 1945, I think, but I was in service, but that's where everybody sort of quit fishing. You know, everybody started getting jobs here and there. And it was not necessary for them to go out trapping anymore. Of course, gradually, you know.
Did a lot of people have fish wheels?
Oh, yes, everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes they'd go partnership on one wheel, and then whatever they catch, I suppose they split in half. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, what kind of catch were you getting?
Oh, mostly chums. Mm-hmm. And then as the summer war came along, we started catching mixed fish, like whitefish, chiefish. And then sometimes Chinook fish. That's early in part of September.
About how many fish, you know?
Oh, when the heavy rain was on, the wheat, the most wheat cut was around 1,800 fish in one day. And then it rose a lot of different people in our camp at that time. And that was, I'm talking about the whole camp cutting about that many. And the fish ran pretty heavy for about a week. And then by that time, we'd cut enough fish.
But how many people would be in a camp? How many families?
Oh, well, maybe 2-3 families. But of course, some families just stayed down there just to stay out. I mean, spend the summer in a camp. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Some used fish nets.
Well, how much fish do you figure you would need for each dog and then fish for eating fish?
Oh, well, that's kind of hard to say there. We used to bale them in bundles, maybe 50 to 60 fish in each bundle. And we'd put up about anywhere from 30 to 40, maybe more, 40 bales, even 50. And that lasts the whole winter for about 9 or 10 dogs. That'll last the whole winter. And then maybe you can just imagine how many fish it takes to feed one dog.
Yeah.
It can hurt. I'd say about, maybe about 250 to 300 fish a dog, I'd say. That's just a rough guess.
I guess it would depend on how hard you work the
dog. Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how many dogs did you have most of that?
Well, average number would be about 9, a family. Mm-hmm. And then if you had your own, I'd say about 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. Like my uncle there, he wasn't married by that time. He had about 5 of his own. That's all he needed. It was just a small sleigh. And he used to go out with us while we had bigger sleigh and then more dogs. Of course, we had more stuff. And then he'd have just so much stuff. And that way, he didn't need too many dogs. And then after he got married, he started raising family. He had to start having more dogs.
Were the dogs different then?
Well, no. Up till now, a dog will never change. Of course, although not being used nowadays, except them racers. And they don't seem to change at all in one way or another.
Well, so what happened after you were 18?
18, well, of course I got into service for about 3 years, and after I came home, I started trapping all by myself. Of course, my old man passed over. He got accidentally killed up here in the camp. And then I was about 24, 25 when I came back. And then I started going out alone, my own team. And then where my old man used to trap, him and I took over that area. And I trapped in that area for till 1963, last time I ever trapped in the Katilo River. Of course, it was pretty rough for one fellow. I mean, when it snows heavy, you'd have to snowshoe a day ahead before you move.
Would you go out by yourself?
Oh, yes. I went out by myself before I got married for about, 1947. I went out about 3-4 years all by myself before I got married. And then after I got married, we both went out together.
When did you get married?
Oh, in the fall of 49. Mm-hmm. And then it was just the same thing over and over again. After we'd get through fishing, we'd move back here to town, and then everybody had boats with inboard motor in them years. And we all piled up everything in there, groceries, Of course, we didn't never pay for the groceries, but then we'd get credit from the stores, and all our belongings, all the dogs, and we'd move back up to camp, like everybody else. And then it was the same thing over and over.
Who did you marry?
Pardon?
Who did you marry?
Oh, she's Annie. Oh, yeah. And I was 28.
Oh.
Yeah, she was pretty young. Yeah. Did you shut it off?
Well, you think if, you said if snow machines came out about 40 years ago, there
yes.
wouldn't be any furs?
Oh, they'd be hardly any furs because you'd cover quite your area in just less time it takes than you'd do with a dog team. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you'd make a long run with a snow machine. But then on the other hand, if you ever break down, that's it. You'd have to walk way out there where there's no parts, no gas, if you're short of gas. And then I'd say with a dog team, it was much better if you were way out in the bush. Because you'd always, of course, you'd have your dog feed with there into camp. And then no matter how cold it is, you'd have to travel sometimes with the dog team. While the snow machine, you'd have to warm it up. And sometimes it's very hard to warm up. Of course, you'd have the equipment, certain equipment to warm a snow machine.
What kind of equipment?
I'd use a stovepipe and a little gas stove. And I used to run that stovepipe right to the carburetor. And for about half hour, I used to throw heat in there by the gas stove. And it sort of heats the carburetor up, and it starts pretty easy in cold weather that way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you're just starting it just the way it was, you'd never get started. You'd never get it started.
Mm-hmm. When did you first start using snow go?
Oh, let me see, 61. In the fall of 69, I bought my first snow machine. But then other people, they got theirs much earlier than that. I'd say about 62. That was first snow machine was ever was shipped here. Of course, a fellow bought it in Fairbanks, and that's the first snow machine I'd seen. But it was a different type. It was what you call a snow traveler. With the little tracks right in the middle, and the runners ran all the way back on both sides. That was the first machine that ever came out. Nowadays, you just see both skis in front and the track behind. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, you'd cover more country than you'd do with a dog team. And of course, you do it, like I said, you do it in one day, then you didn't do it in 2 or 3 days. And in that way, there won't be much fur. I mean, every year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it's changing now? The fur?
Well, they're sort of coming abundant since nobody ever hardly go out anymore. Mm-hmm. Trapping. Mm-hmm. Last year when we were trapping, we didn't have to go very far to catch 40 marten. Whereas in the years we've been trapping every year, you'd have to go 40 or 50 miles just to get a few. So that indicates that they're coming back, the fur, since they're not being trapped too much.
Did you go trapping last year?
I did, just with my boy, 14-year-old boy, just to show him how.
What's his name?
His name is Gabriel.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This year so far, I haven't gone out yet in kind of the open river, and so much overflow in the lakes. Mm-hmm. So one trouble is you just can't get into overflow with a snow machine. You'd get the snow packed up in between the track, and if it's very cold, you just have to get the snow machine out and make a fire. You just can't afford to get an overflow in a very cold weather. Mm-hmm. Whereas the dogs could go right through an overflow and it wouldn't bother them at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have dogs now?
Well, we just got one. I used to have two last year, but then they got sold that we had to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You
kind of
miss that? Miss having
that? Oh, sort of, yeah.
A lot of work,
yeah. But then on the other hand, if a snow machine ever breaks down with you way out, you'd have to walk home. Mm-hmm. I've
That's
seen
a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. I've had to walk home, too. About 6 or 7 miles.
Oh,
yeah.
Your snow machine broke down?
No, it just ran out of gas or just won't start at all. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to, sometimes it would be sort of cold, I'd have to get another snow machine to bring me back out there with a stovepipe and a gas heater. Mm-hmm. Then I heat my snow machine up and start again. I just come right back home.
Mm-hmm. Do your children, like Gabriel, does he ever ask about having dogs? He ever talk about wanting dogs?
Oh, well, we sort of gave up having dogs before he was born. So we didn't have very many dogs while he started remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, maybe he drove one or two dogs, but then he wasn't interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody else, he was interested in just a snow machine.
Is that what's going on now?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hardly see anybody go out with dog team anymore. Just maybe two or three guys
mm-hmm.
from each village. And the rest of the people use the snow machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you said 63 was the last time you...
Yeah, on that Katil River.
Oh, yeah. And then you went someplace else?
Someplace else, up on the Kaikuk River, flats. Between the Kaikuk River and the hills on your left, where they call the big porridge. I used to trap there for two or three years.
Mm-hmm. Why did you change places?
Oh, well, we drew unemployment in the years from around 1960, when we first started going down to the canneries. I forgot to mention that. In 1960, our first job was down in Bristol Bay. Yeah, and then
who went down there?
Oh, whoever was able to, like say about 6 or 7 men, of course boys among them. You were not allowed to work until you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
And then we spent our time down there as cannery workers, and we'd be gone for as long as a month and a half, sometimes a little over a month. It depends on how the fish ran, whether they were light or heavy. And in that way, we'd have this unemployment benefits to help us along. And that way we didn't have to go out trapping at least before Christmas. And then after Christmas, we'd go out beaver trapping. Like everybody did that. That was from 1960 till around 1969, and since this firefighting work came up, then everybody just quit going to the canneries. Of course, it's not every year that you go firefighting. It's just whenever they call you, you know.
What was that cannery work like? What did you have to do?
Oh, well, a lot of different types. I mean, a lot of different. You'd be a head butcher, or you'd be a fish inspector, if there's any bones or guts in them. They call them slimers. And then you're just on down the line till the fish came out in cases. It's all the way through the line. Of course, the processing plant was down on the ground floor, and most of the time the can shop was up on the next floor. And then we'd be strung out all along. We'd do different type of work. Some would be shoving this bunch of coolers with cans into the big boilers, and on the other end, some would be pulling them out after they're in there for an hour and a half. And some would be driving, what you call this, jitneys, and then driving to the warehouse where they'd cool off, and then 24 hours later they'd haul them to the casing line. Well, it was, we were all strung out anyway, yeah.
Did you try all those different jobs? Did you have one job?
Well, we went through different jobs. Mm-hmm. And then after the fishing is over, season closed, we'd do a lot of longshoring. We'd load these tenders as much as it could hold, and these scows, open scows, and they'd haul them out to the ship. And that's where you'd have to go to longshore, either on the ship or handle the cages on the outside. Sometimes it got pretty rough. Sometimes they'd have to turn the tenders loose and just to get away from the ship. You know, the wind, strong wind comes up, and they just couldn't be tied alongside the ship to be unloading. It was pretty rough work anyway. Yes, sometimes you'd never sleep for days. Yeah, they couldn't afford to lose any time. A ship will hold about 300,000 cases, and then didn't have much time to be anchored there. No matter how tired you were, they just get you working. The longshoring is piling. Either from the scow or down in the hold, you know, piling cases. For one instance, first time I ever went out, I don't think we slept 10 hours for 5 days. Well, there was no replacements. That's the roughest life. That's the roughest I ever had.
Did they pay very well?
Oh, yes. They were paying cash, too, at that. They paid pretty good.
Yeah. They paid overtime?
Yes, they paid overtime. And then they pay with all cash. And but then after a while they start paying in checks, or they were sort of affiliated with the cannery and the ship, you know. They'd pay us all in checks just when we're ready to go home at the cannery. They didn't trust any boys getting drunk or anything, like gambling their money away. Yeah. First time I ever went to the cannery was in 1946. Of course, they paid us all in cash at that time. Of course, we all got in a big game of dice. Some of the boys came home broke. Mm-hmm. Since that time, they start paying in checks. Of course, that news went all over the cannery, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, since that time, they paid in checks. And sometimes they never gave you checks till you came home. Sometimes they'd give it to one guy, and he'd have it in his possession. He just won't give it to you. But lately, they never did that. They did that in some instances.
They want to make sure you get home in the morning.
Yeah. So, like I say, when you start go firefighting, the last time we ever went to the cannery was in about 69 or 70. And then the cannery recruiter never came around anymore to pick up cannery boys. I guess he knew what was going on. So I guess they hired most of the men from the States, these Filipinos, mostly. That's what they hire mostly nowadays, I guess. Of course, they were pretty well experienced in cannery work, some people. Oh, yeah.
What would you say is the hardest job in the cannery?
Actually, longshoring out on the ship. In either places, whether you're outside, alongside the ship, on the scow or in the hold. It depends on how much fish you're unloading. Sometimes scow after scow, you would come to the ship, and then no sleep. You just have to keep working. Well, of course, if there was any replacement, they'd maybe let you rest for a little while.
You actually sleep on the ship there,
or
you go back in?
No, we just let us sleep on the ship there. Of course, if you're working for the ship, you're down in the hold. If you're working for the cannery, you're outside on the scow.
Which did you think was better?
Oh, well, down in the hold was better. Oh, yes. I tried a few times out out in the scow, because I couldn't stand it. I just get sick, seasick. Oh, yeah. Yeah.